guitarist, composer, arranger Bill Frisell with Where Do We Go? It's from his 2001 album, Blues Dream. Frisell is one of the leading jazz guitarists around, and in recent years was combining jazz with folk and country music. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And keeping my word, we're back at the same topic yesterday, although with different dimensions to it. I really feel so badly when we don't get a chance to take everybody in. But the good thing is, I assure you, I'll do my very best to make sure you are heard and you have a chance to express yourself. So we had a very brisk discussion yesterday, and we've been talking about these mass killings and the impact it is having all over. We see that, as usual, politics decided to take a center stage yesterday with Barack Obama, indirectly, although very clearly taking aim at President Trump, but saying in a general way that people ought to reject hateful language and instead use the opportunity, in as much as they're taking it, to bring people together, but certainly not to exacerbate things by using divisive language. Yesterday's discussion focused on recent mass killings in Virginia Beach, El Paso, and Dayton as unique manifestations of violence in American life. 12 were killed, 6 wounded in the lone gunman's attack in Virginia Beach on May the 31st. 20 died and 26 were wounded in El Paso on August the 3rd in the deadliest mass killing so far this year. And within hours after that, 9 others died and 27 were wounded in a mass killing in Dayton, Ohio. Even for a nation steeped in the culture of violence, the deadly attacks were too much to bear. The madness must end, the nation said. So we will focus today on what is shaping up to be heavy political fallout. It was bound to happen because of the enormity of these tragic events. And just the same, it was very instructive yesterday to hear an entirely different take on it from most of the callers. Very instructive. I hope people were listening. It was not just about the literal events. Anybody could see what happened. Anybody could understand what happened. But most of the callers put it in perspective, and that was very refreshing to hear, because it means that you're not taking for granted whatever the media outlets are saying, what the so-called leaders are saying. That is not your vantage point. Your point of view is reaches into a whole different history that America has long denied, and even now won't acknowledge it. And that is the impact and the issue being race. There's no question about it. But we saw a very strong effort being made to cover it up, not mention it, ignore it, hide it, do whatever they wanted to do. And even those who spoke. And I understand that as a former president, Barack Obama cannot come out and engage in battle with the current president. It would not have been diplomatic of him to do something like that. But at the same time, we ended up at the space, the place where we always end up. And that is, even in their grief, even with the craziness that we're dealing with as a nation, people are still minding their P's and Q's lest they pay a price for being open and frank and direct about what this nation has to deal with, what it has ignored time and again. As was said yesterday, this is not the first time the nation has witnessed this kind of barbarity and violence. It is not. Yes, it is jarring nonetheless. But it brings to our direct attention how different America is for many people from the America that we are told about, the America touted about. That's a different America. Most Americans, especially Americans of color, know a different America. And although the numbers are high in these killings, and I'm only going back for the sake of discussion to May the 31st, we can't deny that we are accustomed to enormous amounts of violence directed at people who don't deserve it, people who, for reasons that have to do with the color of their skin, a whole different history. It's like two entirely different worlds. So I was very heartened when that analysis came to the fore yesterday, and people got it right. They understood that there was this other America that most of America don't know, don't talk about. And so they talk about violence, but not about the racial history of that violence. So if you didn't have a chance to talk yesterday, I urge you to call in today at 888-874-4888 and let your feelings be known. What are you seeing now as the political fallout of these mass killings? How are leaders dealing with it or not dealing with it? How are we being persuaded to deal with it? And, of course, you know, the backdrop to all of that is we are in the midst of political season, campaign season. And this is going to be very, very significant in the campaigns of many of the candidates. So they have to convey a certain sympathy, but at the same time, they don't want to be seen as being overly sympathetic to groups that the victims of these killings belong to. Clara from Philadelphia, you start us off today.
Hello.
Hello, Teresa. Clara. Hello, haven't heard from you in a while.
Yes, I've been listening. I wanted to say that first that I really was encouraged by the first two callers, the ideas that they expressed and the understanding of Chris and David yesterday. And I wanted to follow up on some of what they said because I've thought a lot about it over time. And it seems to me that the basis of what they were saying is that, this is the way I understood it, that the history of this country is determining what is happening now. And as you said, this is nothing new. It's intensified and more glaring now because we have someone in the White House who is perpetuating it and actually encouraging it. And the people who have been, to a large extent, underground are coming out of the woodwork and doing whatever they want to do and have wanted to do over time because this behavior of this violent behavior towards people of color and others, not just people of color, but anyone whom they see is in their way, anyone who threatens their continuation of their use and abuse of the resources of the world. All of us are potential victims. As I see it, I see a civil war underway. And as I think it was Winston Churchill once said, is this the end of the beginning or the beginning of the end? I think it's the latter. And what I think about that is that we need to understand what's going on. I don't think many, you see, the people who are so-called liberals have a stake in keeping things as they are. They don't want to change. Their white privilege is at stake, and that's the fear. They will lose it. And the white privilege is based on a delusion of superiority. If you decide that you're going to believe something over time, you begin to act in ways to make it happen. The way I see it in history, way back, white people saw what people of color had and did, the genius of people of color, the genetics of people of color. They were up against it. And they've done everything in their power to overcome, to switch things around, and we have not understood it. We have not understood it. We still don't understand it. And so what we need to do, I believe, and this is what I'm doing, to listen, pay attention, but don't get involved in that. We can't stop it except from what we do for ourselves. And that is really pay attention to our health. I know that this is like an old record, but our health is something that we must have. We're going to be faced with some very difficult times. And a simple thing like cutting back on what you eat. Listen, go to the YouTubes. They tell you how to take care of yourself. Instead of sitting around the TV, get your children in front of the podcast, like Dr. Berg, Dr. Kassar, everybody, even Gary. Gary gives you the basics. These people give you the techniques to put all that together. Throw out that TV. We have to be prepared for a real war. It's already started, but we better hurry up. There are many weapons. One weapon is a great health. The weapons are going to come from everywhere. We don't have the guns. They come from our kitchens, our tool kits, everything. I'm telling you, that's the way I say it. There's no solution to this place. It can't be changed except through total revolution.
Wow, that's a pretty dire prediction and observation.
I'm a realist. I'm not a positive person. I'm not a negative person. I look at history, and I look at human behavior. And I've been I've been educated in both, and I also have age and time to think. I don't have to go to work. I can think. I can read. I have a luxury here. I can listen to you and other people, and then, I mean, this is dire. We're in dire circumstances. I saw something online the other day by a white, he's a white survivalist. He's always talking about guns and going off and being on your own. But that day he talked about the value of knives. Sometimes a gun isn't a practical thing. It doesn't work. Maybe you're out of ammo. And that's all I have to say.
Well, thank you for getting us started. Very much. Thank you. Ernie from New York, you're on the air. How are you interpreting? What is the political fallout as you see it?
Well, I see the political candidates, the ones from those different states where these things happen, especially one from El Paso, they're using it for, of course, to move along their nomination. It's kind of, I felt funny when I first heard this shooting because the politicians are going to use it, just like CNN is using the event to constantly give us topics and related to that, and also, of course, they're getting commercials. But I wanted to pinpoint something related to the shooting, and it was the Las Vegas shooting that occurred a couple years back. That one was never resolved. I looked at the last information regarding the Las Vegas shooting, and apparently it was closed with no results, meaning that they did not find a motive from the shooter. How can the investigator not pursue 100% what happened in a situation like Vegas and all the other shootings and find out exactly what happened? With all the techniques we have, with all the scientists, philosophers, psychologists, how can they not find out why the Las Vegas shooter did what he did? He was an older guy. Apparently, he was not mentally insane, et cetera, apparently. So if you can't solve one, you're not going to be able to find out what's happening with the other cases. This 21-year-old that committed this act, these guys, they're just starting out in life. They're getting indoctrinated. They're not thinking about consequences, et cetera. They may have some sort of a psychological issue going on. But if we don't solve the other problems, the other shootings, how can they talk about trying to resolve this one? They should have investigated. All these shootings should be investigated 100%. Use the so-called terrorism, not the term, but the laws related to terrorism, and denote them as terrorist acts, and go after this situation. Investigate everything. Investigate their parents. Investigate their friends. Investigate the background, what they did, how they grew up, which school they went to, what kind of medications they're taking, all that. That's just what I wanted to say about this, Eugene.
I want you to come directly to the question originally raised. What is, from your point of view, the political fallout going to be from these most recent mass killings?
Well, we are at a stage where immigrants are being used as a political football. Immigrants have been blamed some people have been blaming them for the current situation, like jobs, the economy, et cetera. And just like you said earlier, some of the politicians are going to use this and say they're in full support of the immigrants or blacks or Latinos. And the other ones are going to kind of be careful what they say. It's going to be used in that context. It's going to be used to forward their candidacy. Is it happened in the past? I mean, shooting happened before when Obama was president. He went to, I think it was South Carolina, I forgot, or Georgia, with a shooting in the church.
Yes.
There's a shooting in the church down there. Obama went and did his thing, and all his entourages, people that worked with him, went down to the south to show support in that sense. And then nothing happened, and then the shooting just continued. I mean, even you could have a black president or a Republican president, you have shootings in both presidents. The question is, how do you resolve this? How do you investigate this thing? You got to go deep into it, find out what exactly, and you'll find out that you could trade, you could, if they can go, if we can spend money and go to the moon and put vehicles on the moon with people in it, and also on Mars without people, then why can't they try to resolve what's happening with these, you know, psychologically? It could be hatred. But I don't know, a 21-year-old, how can he hate people like that? He's been indoctrinated. No different than the Al-Qaeda young people being indoctrinated. No, that's my point, my statement here, Richie.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your contribution today, Ernie. Thank you. Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Hi, Trees.
Hello.
Listeners and the family. Yeah. We're so fortunate to have you on the airwaves, period.
Oh, well, thank you.
That's number one. I really liked all your callers, but especially the lady who called about one or two calls ago.
That's Clara from Clara. Philadelphia.
Oh, and that's funny. and you know, her statement is not as shocking as it may appear on the face of it. My observations tell me, this was always here, this vein of venom and hatred toward the other. Has been here a long time in this country, but when America elected a black president, that was really the threshold. That it went over the threshold to that point. And it's interesting because when you hear folks comment about the Obama presidency and how people will say, "Well, he was so divisive," or "He was this, he was that." You know, I'm talking in terms of race. I find it to be quite remarkable because most black folk would say, well, he was scared of his black shadow. You see what I'm saying here?
Mm-hmm. I'm listening.
Okay. So, and to hear statements like that that are actually opposite of what's going on, see, we're dealing with frightened people. There's a whole group of people who are frightened, scared to death at the darkening of America. And they will do almost anything to try to prevent, thwart what is going to happen anyway. It's the inevitable. But the problem, it seems, one of the problems is that, of course, our figurehead, the president, and the people that he has given voice to and appointed to certain positions, he's been surrounding himself with white supremacists and flunkies. And this is beyond politics, Steve Bannon, white supremacist, the other young man who was a self-hating Jew, his name escapes me at this moment. So I don't see an easy way out of this because no matter what the president says, like his little half-hearted speech, his supporters would say, well, he just had to say that. Just to be politically correct, he had to say that. So it's too late now. It's too late.
So where do you see things going? If it's too late to do anything to solve it or to attenuate it, where then is it going?
I'm glad you asked that question. And I'd like to bring, I don't know if it's appropriate to talk about folks or ask questions, but I often really think that I agree with what David from Brooklyn has to say all the time. I think we just have different, he and I have different labels for what he's talking about. in terms of systems analysis and, you know, the way that this system is working like it's supposed to work. But my question would be, what would David say? What are the solutions? See, because we've passed the precipice now. Let's think about this. Now, we know this is empirical evidence. We know for a fact that these things that the president says, these racially charged statements, his outright racism, you know, because people even are still denying that he's racist, which historically and by virtue of the court system, we know he's racist. And anyone who's lived in New York or in the Northeast knows he's been racist for. If you're a certain age, you know that. But now, you see, there's a whole contingent of these folks that are in the military and the police. So this is the worrisome part to me.
Well, do you think an attempt should be made nonetheless to raise this publicly, talk about the dilemma that America once again has put itself in? On the one hand, it talks about its reverence for freedom and democracy and all of that. On the other hand, we have vivid proof going back many, many, many decades, I would say even centuries, that contradict all these claims. But we are not moving toward some kind of justice or equality or all these lofty things that we talk about. We are not anywhere close to it. We just talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
What would have been a different signal from your point of view in the wake of this, of these mass killings coming from those who are in leadership positions?
Well, the president's verbiage should have been much different, I think, if he really wanted to send a powerful message. He would have, and I've heard some talking heads say this, and I agree, that he should have said, "I denounce white supremacy," okay, on the heels maybe of him saying, "I understand that many people accuse me of being racist. And I have made mistakes in the past," because the facts are there that he is operated as a racist. And I mean, you know, this is an educational moment because a lot of folks maybe don't understand the difference between being a bigot, having bias, being prejudiced, and being racist. Because to be a true racist, there's an element of power. And so the president really checks all the boxes for as far as you can go on that spectrum of being racist. He's got all the boxes checked. That's, I mean, anyone who understands in an academic sense what racism is, institutional racism, personal racism, that type of thing. But he should have said, "I understand that people think I'm racist, but I denounce white supremacy in action." Because he believes in it, in theory. It's obvious. Why would you surround yourself with people who are white nationalists, to use a euphemism, if you're not? And we really, I think right now, a good signal would be for our lawmakers to begin impeachment of the Attorney General. Because it's obvious he perjured himself many times already, as did Sessions. Jeff Sessions also, and to act like for people who make a lot of money just for talking on television, for them to deny the fact of what a scurrilous and debauched person the Attorney General is. Remember, he pardoned, he had a hand in that crack cocaine scourge, you know, pardoning Oliver North or giving him a pass. See, he was part of that whole cabal. So he cares nothing. They only like government when government works for them in their mind. He's a subversive. So that's a good place to start, because it's not just the president now. He has surrounded himself with people in powerful positions that make policy. And that's the dangerous part.
Do you think it would galvanize any kind of political power to oppose a system that is regarded as racist?
I think so. The tricky part is that for any movement to be successful when it comes to office, is that we live within a bicameral system. You know, basically you have to be a Republican or a Democrat. So what would have to happen is that, forget about the Republican Party, because they're about to fracture anyway. We have to build a movement and change the whole platform of the Democratic Party that'll work within the system to change the system. That's what I would suggest. I would like to see that happen. Because right now, what person of good self-esteem, any person that regards themselves to be normal, how could you associate yourself with the Republican Party now?
Well, we're seeing many, many resignations, and we're seeing an increased criticism coming from within the Republican Party. So that is unusual, but it's significant. Not nearly enough in terms of the volume that is needed to be far more pronounced, but it is a significant start. Thanks, Khalil, for your call, putting a lot of good thoughts on the table for us to consider. Thank you for calling in today. Maat from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, greetings, Yatrice, and to the beloved family, and of course, you're part of that.
Thank you.
Okay, I will catch the yesterday, because that was my, I had to get some rest time, but I tell you, this is really, really, really something, and my heart just breaks for, you know, those people in El Paso and Dayton is just almost incomprehensible. In terms of this speech that Trump made on Monday, I mean, it's just, first of all, his eyes were virtually closed. It was not from the heart at any level. It was in the passive voice. He was basically lecturing the American people instead of saying, I, you know. And this idea, you notice that when you look at a certain type of evil, that if it's a young white guy, it's a mental illness and video games. I mean, how ridiculous can it get? But I tend to agree with Clara and a lot of the other points the other callers made. One of the things that I'm going to give you some homework, because when I found out, and I heard it on the Coast to Coast program, and George Nori, originally a heritage of the Middle East, has just bought into this far right wing, and it's just a head scratcher. So the Coasties out there, you know, I'd like to have some dialogue with them. But I heard about Robert Evans' podcast, and I first thought it was something from the right, where it was, it could happen here. And he's someone who travels the world and observes civil wars and conflicts around the planet. And I thought that, you know, I tuned in expecting a far-right analysis and more of the same. But instead, I thought he gave a pretty studied, thoughtful, and he actually shows different scenarios and how they would go down in terms of what he dubbed the Second Civil War. He has some great music also by a brother. So at some point, I would like you to, because when I mentioned that some time ago, you kind of pull back, and I understand we have to look at always at the whole picture, but if you could give us some breakdown of why you sort of immediately pulled back. I'd like to hear some of your analysis, because as I heard Clara and maybe one or two others say, is that this is some deep, you know what?
Well, we've known that, and in fact, I would go so far as to say, we have acknowledged and accepted a lot of these theories a long time ago, because we were the first wave, if you will, of this kind of violence directed the First Nations people, and then we had the waves of slaves and other Africans who may not have been slaves, but in effect were slaves because they had no rights. We've been through this. This is our history. So we, you know, it's different because the circumstances are different and we think that things are different. So we come to regard it, these things as such. But look at history. All you have to do is read our history. Born in the crucible of violence, maintained by violence, ruled by violence.
And you, Therese, absolutely. And the last point I want to make, a few years ago, the last name is Newson, the book, and there's been some documentary work, I think, too. They had a program I didn't make, but it's called Pagans in the Promised Land. And it clearly brought out the fact that the Christian doctrine of discovery, in terms of even connecting it to these so-called Christians that say, you know, evangelical Christians, Reverend Barber considers him the evangelical, but the term has become to mean these white Christians who, you know, just refuse to back down to Trump being their guy, whether, you know,
but
he's a philanderer or a liar or whatever. But this Christian doctrine,
I want us to get back to the point we should be talking about. What is, in your view, the political fallout, as you predict? What will the political fallout be?
In terms of what aspect of it?
Well, we had even the president of Mexico is about to charge the United States. Which, I mean, the United States as a country didn't do anything, but he's making the case that the assassin was in fact fulfilling a prophetic kind of violence on innocent Mexicans. And he's specific about that.
Yes, and I'm glad. We should be glad about that. But as to the political fallout, it's hard to see. Hopefully that means that at least the people that are not the outright fascists will take control in the 2020 election. I mean, you know, David, I love David from Brooklyn. I can align with his principles, but we can still do things on the ground so things don't get even worse and even more fascistic. But it doesn't end well. You know, just the cult of personality around Trump and the Republicans and Moscow Mitch, and he actually, Utrecht, he actually put up like a five tombstone or so graveyard. As the people are burying their sudden snatched dead in terms of his opponents. I mean, this is how just nonsensical the Republicans and people like Mitch McConnell are. I mean,
but here's the thing. I like to say, let's suppose we accept the broad criticisms of the president, his administration, etc. The question I'm trying to get at is, what are we going to do?
I think
Clara's version is take care of ourselves, take care of our health, and prepare for essentially a new civil war. What do you think?
Well, in many ways, it's already started. You know, and we have, of course, Brother Eitan Edwards, who's doing an Afro prep site and a book that's about to come out. And so he approaches that survivalist. You know, I know Clara mentioned this white guy she listened to, but I don't think he does a podcast. But I think on his Afro prep site, or, you know, and it'll be fleshed out more, I imagine, as the book comes out. I think it's probably a lot of good information in preparing for the apocalypse, because we've been there a long time, and it's now just in your face, more overt.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how far people are willing to go in their own interest to protect themselves and to protect the community, but first to acknowledge the reality that we're living in. It's being covered over, plastered over, dismissed outright. Nobody wants to talk about the situation, the real situation that we all are in. Thanks for adding to your points from yesterday. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, beloved, and my parents and family. How are you doing?
Okay.
I just hope you're feeling much better, my sister.
I'm hoping so, too.
I thank you so much for being there for us. But, Eutrice, you know, I think we've been, the narrative is that a white supremacist. I mean, it's a trick. There's nothing supreme about killing innocent, unarmed people. That's cowardice and wickedness. You see, look. If Mike Tyson in his heydays would be fighting some 12-year-old girls with glasses that thick, there's nothing supreme about that kind of behavior. He took on everybody. Muhammad Ali took on everybody. Now, that's supreme. You can't be shooting at people who have no guns and saying that's supreme. That's absurd, in my judgment. I'm not in my judgment. I know that's insane. Now, the sadness about this whole thing is that, oh, we're saying that, well, there's mental problems, and that's an excuse, because we're witnessing people who are supposed to be law enforcement protecting us all over this country. They are doing it. They are shooting us down on our people. So are they insane too, or is it,
Let's deal with the question at hand. The question at hand is, what do you believe the political fallout will be, or should be?
I don't think there will be one, because you're dealing with the one party, the Republican and them. It's the same people. So to look to either party for anything different, that's absurd. Because the Democrats and Republicans, they all went along with the destruction and murdering of the people in Libya. You see, violence is violence, Eutrice.
Uh-huh.
You cannot be killing these people all over the world. They were talking about killing more people in Venezuela. What have these people done? But I think it's coming to a closure. Your days come to a closure. That's the only way I see out of this. Because it cannot continue. The violence against people all over. We talk about, you know, it's sad that anyone had to die. But you have to look on the larger scale. We should be outraged when these people are talking about wars. And there's no outcry. And you're killing millions of people. So The I see that, you know, this is coming to a closure. Because the American people have been dumbed down so much, they're not even thinking about these things. And it cannot continue, because there's a power bigger than all of us. Whatever you want to call it, I have no interest in that. That's your business. But there is a power, a universal power that's bigger than all of us. And I think the reason why these things are happening, it's the whole entire world is looking at this. And that's what our minister have been telling us from day one. For 63 years. And he's a brother that has never lied to us. So what would make us think he's lying? He talked about Trump before he got in office. So I mean, we can fight these people with guns. As a Japanese. You, Therese?
Yes, I'm listening. I listen very hard to what people say.
Tell you, when it comes to violence, you're dealing with Satan himself. You're being uncovered today. Anyway, you just said, listen, somebody else get on. I love you, my sister. I hope somebody can help and share your
thoughts with us today. It's very profound, I would say. Ashby from New York, you're on the air.
Yes.
What is likely to be the political fallout as it is shaping up even now as we speak?
Well, I have to agree with Clara. It's quite disastrous. I agree wholeheartedly with what she said. Get yourself in order. You've been telling us about making changes. A lot of us are not listening. I don't know about you, Therese. I give you credit for being patient. But I am totally frustrated. When you find that bridge, I'm jumping with you. Because we don't seem to get it. We don't get it. You've been telling us all along the history of this country is based on violence. It's been happening for 500 years plus. You're not going to change the minds of these people. Black folks need to get out of the Democratic Party and stop looking at them as their savior. They're just as bad as the Republicans. You've been talking about that all along, but we are just not getting it. I'm becoming very totally frustrated because, you know, I'm hearing a lot of frustration on the phone. On the other hand, like I said, I give you a lot of credit. I'm doing what Evelyn is doing. Clara, that's my thing.
The thing is,
get that health in order, get your family
and community. Well, I shouldn't say very satisfied. I like the idea that you can push people into at least thinking things over and seeing the reality in which we are all living. This is the reality. I talk time and time again about reclaiming our community, reclaiming our power, reclaiming the resources, the few resources that we have, we reclaim, because there's power there.
Yes.
And every time something like this, these shootings happen, we are reminded of how vulnerable we still are. We're very vulnerable.
Yes. Well, I don't know. I'm not hearing that the message is getting across. Our folks don't want to change. They don't want to change. And I'm very frustrated, extremely. I'm going to do my thing, continue to do my thing with my community and my family. But it's a sad thing of what I'm hearing. Your message doesn't seem to be getting through. You're so patient. I give you so much credit. I remember you from Talk Back on WBAI. Thank you so much for all that you do. And I'm going to continue to do my thing, plus what Clara is doing. Continue it. It's most important.
And let's do
Thank
it
you.
Together. This is the thing. We do our things individually and together. We need
yes.
a whole different approach, a whole different mentality. because we're seeing what is in store.
Definitely.
And what is actually happening. We just can't sit and let it happen.
But I find that we are putting too much faith in this thing you call the system. That's been existing for 500 years or more. You know, we're written out of that. That's the do unto us. But we don't seem to get it. Because when I'm hearing people talking, they're talking about, oh, the system this, oh, the Democratic Party that. And then on this other thing, universal whatever, whoever that is, we can't rely on that either. We have to get up off our and get busy because we're way behind the eight ball. We're like we're in a state of rigor mortis, DOA.
Wow. You know, what are these conversations doing to you as you listen to your fellow listeners and you listen to me, you listen to your neighbors? What is your state of mind at the moment?
When I let me see if I understood what you said. You said when I listen to my fellow listeners and my neighbors.
Yeah, are your neighbors.
What is my state of mind?
What emerges as your state of mind when you engage?
Frustration. Total frustration because of the fact that. Because many of my neighbors are in my age group. We are older. Some of us are retired. And when we're talking, and I'm talking about the history and these current events that are happening, and they're coming back to me with some of the things that I hear some of my fellow listeners saying on your program, I kind of lose it. I just lose it. I have to throw my hands up. Because we should know better. We're older. We've been here long. We should know what the system is all about. We should know the history of this country. I give you credit. You have patience.
No, I sense your frustration, but believe it or not, I think that's where most of us are, frustrated. And the hope always is that somewhere along the line, we'll pick up some speed and move toward a solution, especially of the most important problems that we are suffering from. So hopefully, you know, they'll see the light and begin to move in their own interests. But
well,
it's good to talk with you, and thank you so much for contributing today. Thanks a lot. All right, well, that brings us to the end of our program today. As you notice, we are not talking in a way that, we're not analyzing the tragedies. We already accept that these are not only tragedies, but they are enormous tragedies. What we're trying to do is to reach back to other tragedies we already have suffered and begin to ask the questions, have we learned anything? And if so, what is it that we have learned over hundreds of years? Are we being bamboozled once again to believe, well, this time it's different? I say, no, it's not different. And I see that there's a wide agreement about this. We've been here before. We look at the response that we're getting from the political establishment. We look and we see that, you know, they're consumed with a whole different agenda right now. They don't have time to take this on. This is an added burden. So inevitably, we have to see to our own interests, and we have to respond also to those for whom we have great sympathy. But I agree. Who was it who said today? I think it was Ma'at. Who said that the writing is on the wall? So did Clara. The writing is on the wall. It has already been a success when you attack vulnerable people. That was proven over and over and over again in the past. The question is, first, do we recognize and understand that we are vulnerable? And two, what is it that we are prepared to do? How do we solve our unique problems? That will continue to be the question of the century. It need not be, but I strongly suspect that that's what it will turn out to be. That we will be distracted, we will be involved in other things that have nothing to do with our collective survival. People coming together to promote a more just and democratic society. These ideals were thrown out the window a long time ago. And we still hold on to the hope that folks will see the light and behave differently and treat us differently. It's not going to happen. Not anytime soon. Thanks so much for joining me today. We have a lot more discussion on this issue because there are so many moving parts to it. And we'll try and get that done as expeditiously as possible while we dance on the other side of the fence and tackle other major issues that need to be discussed. All right. Thanks so much. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.